translation. In this way, the conditioned soul, living within the body, forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of the material world. Thus, the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. Responsively, please. In this way, the conditioned soul, living within the body, forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of the material world. Thus the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. Purport. Everyone is trying to be happy because, as explained in the previous verse, Sukham Asyatmano Rupam Saveho Paratish Tanu. When the living entity is in his original spiritual form, he is happy by nature. There is no question of miseries for the spiritual being. As Krishna is always happy, the living entities, who are his parts and parcels, are also happy by nature. But because of being put within this material world and forgetting their eternal relationship with Krishna, they have forgotten their real nature. Because every one of us is a part of Krishna, we have a very affectionate relationship with him. But because we have forgotten our identities and are considering the body to be the self, we are afflicted by all the troubles of birth, death, old age, and disease. This misconception in materialistic life continues unless and until one comes to understand his relationship with Krishna. The happiness sought by the conditioned soul is certainly only illusion, as explained in the next verse. In this way, the conditioned soul living within the body forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of this material world. Thus, the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. Om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Teshatarne Bancha Kalpa Tubhista Kripa Sindhavyevacha Pachitam Pamanibhyo Vaishnavevyo Namanamaha. Some of you might have noticed, you probably couldn't help notice if you were here, that the other day we had about 110 trainee teachers coming here. And I did put a letter up, I hope you saw it, saying that thank you for everyone tolerating that on the day before Gaur Purnim. It was a little bit difficult. We did have a choice. We could have turned them away, but the trainee teachers could only come on that day. And not only that, but I got a report from the lead teacher, from the lecturer there, that they got 100% positive reports about their previous visits when they came to Bhaktivedanta Manor. And it's being funded by the university. Nowadays, to get funding is pretty difficult. The students, so I didn't want to lose that opportunity, because it's not just the one visit, but visits every year, maybe one or two every year. And maybe another example of how we need to have faith in Krishna, because the day before that visit, I was actually thinking, there's no way this is going to work. I wasn't actually thinking like that. I was more kind of going, ah! Right? That was the real experience I was having. And I must admit, in all my 21 years of teaching, I've never had such a hopeless-looking situation, with lack of staff, lack of facilities, people being ill, quite a lot of illness, etc. And can you not hear? All right. So I was wondering how the, excuse the expression, but how the hell is this going to work? And somehow or other, not just I didn't do it, but of course I did do it. To some extent, we have to be like the bird pecking in the ocean, right? That sprow trying to dry up the ocean. Prabhupada gives the example. We have to try as if it depends on us. That's always our position in Krishna consciousness. We have to pretend as if it depends on us. Then, of course, what happens to that little bird when he tried to pick up the ocean to get his nest, to get the nest with the eggs back? Then Garuda came and said, "Ocean, I'll drink you up." And the ocean immediately became fearful. So in the same way, we have to try as if it depends on us. Our service depends on us. We have to think like that. At the same time, Krishna then comes and helps. We actually had one devotee who came and helped, Manush, a very big guy. He looked like... What? Marish, is it? I thought it was Manush, but anyway. Anyway, he's as big as Bhima. First, when I saw him, I said, he's like Kumbhakarna. I thought, no, that's the wrong analogy. Let's call him Bhima. So he came to help, and I thought, wow, you've been sent by Krishna to carry us, you know. So somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy, it worked. And at the at one point, I met one student, and he first of all said, oh, I came here when I was in junior school, in Martindale School, and I remember coming. Actually, we have that experience that when we meet pupils later on that have come with a primary school, they're not so difficult. You know, when you get to about adolescence, there's a kind of a coolness, a protection, a defensiveness. I'm not going to, you know, maybe it's natural. It's natural in one sense, we're forming boundaries, but it's, I'm careful what I do, you know. Right? So when the students come here, they're often very, sitting there, don't want to make a fool of themselves. But we find that the ones that have been in primary schools, they're already open. Right? They know they can be open. And it's quite amazing. And that's the value of sadhu sangha. Gradually, that relationship with Krishna, it just opens the heart. So anyway, this fellow had been before, and he told me, I think it was after lunch, he told me that when he came in the shrine, that day we had all the children singing. I think we also had Ofsted here as well, inspecting the school, if I remember right. Was it that day? Anyway, it was a really fantastic kirtan that day. Amazing kirtan with the children. And he told me that, he said, actually, I'm a Buddhist. Of course, immediately, you know, if you say that to a devotee, you know, my natural tendency, I sort of freeze like that. Not so much nowadays, right, you know. But, you know, I sort of go tense, oh, you're a Buddhist, okay. But of course, I didn't have to, because he said, actually, I'm a Buddhist, and from Buddhism I've learnt what peace is. But when I walked in that room with the children singing, I experienced the kind of happiness that I've never experienced before. Now, isn't that just an expression of pure Krishna consciousness, of our philosophy, that we can achieve peace, maybe peace at the most, from giving up material activities? Because in material activities there's no peace. However, Srila Prabhupada says here, this misconception in materialistic life continues unless, until one comes to understand his relationship with Krishna. And only through that relationship can we have actual positive happiness. I think that's the probably the one thing we can all agree on. We have so many different ideas. We have, you know, we're so different in so many ways. But I think that's the one thing we can all agree on, is we're all trying to be happy. Right? Sometimes I do that. I had a group of students not so long ago, and I said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Why? Why? Why? Why?" And kept going deeper. And they, "Because I want to be happy." Right? "Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that? Why do you want a new Ferrari? Why do you want a new Game Boy? Whatever it is we want, right? Why do we want to become a devotee? Why do we want to become a Buddhist? Why? Because I want to be happy." And that's the common thing. Srila Prabhupada says it's pointless, it's useless trying to think one can be happy in this material world. Mogashya moga kama no mogo jnana vichetasa. Everything's destroyed, everything's cut down. I don't know if you've ever done this. Have you ever sort of, before you join the movement, or even after you join the movement, have you ever sort of, hopefully before you join the movement, have you ever found yourself really wrecked, and then you go on a kind of health fad, right? Get yourself together, right? But then once you've done it, what do you think? Hey, let's go and have a good time, right? And then you go and destroy yourself again, right? That's what often happens, right? We sort of try and clean ourselves up a bit and get healthy, and then we say, okay, now I'm healthy, now let's go down the boozer and have a good time or something like that, right? So that's the problem, unless we find a real alternative to material happiness. We won't be able to keep it up. I mean, it's quite easy in one sense. I've noticed that in the beginning. I was quite excited when I came across Krishna consciousness. I used to like preaching. I was even preaching at parties, and when I was doing things I shouldn't do. But it's quite easy in one sense. It's good, but it's quite easy to preach against material life. Other people have done that as well, right? There's many philosophers who aren't Krishna conscious. There's many cynical people, right? And just cynical about life, right? So it's quite easy in one sense to see the futility of material life. However, of course, the danger is without the positive, it'll get us. Maya will get us again. Maya somehow gets us. So therefore, it's really essential that we find this happiness. I remember years ago, I think when Akhandadi Prabhu was here as temple president, someone saying to him, I'm not concerned about my happiness, Prabhu. I'm just concerned about Krishna's happiness. I remember him saying, no, it's essential you look at your happiness, right? It's essential you look at your own happiness, that you think about that, right? Because otherwise we can deny it, I'm just doing it for Krishna, and then, one day, bye-bye, we're not there anymore, right? We need to sort of look and see whether we're actually getting that satisfaction that we're told comes from practicing Krishna consciousness. Of course, philosophically, the question is, if I can say, we can quite easily say, okay, that won't make me happy. Money won't make me happy. Okay, relationships won't make me happy, blah, blah, blah. But a philosopher should ask, rather than saying, that won't make me happy, should say, where does that desire for happiness come? And that's the danger. The danger is we can just then get that desire and stuff it away and say, no, it's useless. So we have that answer, that if you reach for that fruit in the reflection, then as soon as you touch it, the reflection just disappears. So as soon as we go and grab happiness, it just somehow goes away. I remember actually before I joined the movement, I saw a fantastic play on television. Is it Dr. Faustus, is it? And it was about this fellow who got married to this beautiful lady. And it was in the 60s when they had these really kind of like, as we used to say, far out plays on television, very surreal and things. I remember he married this very beautiful girl. And then on his marriage night, as he turned to embrace her, suddenly you just saw this skeleton, right, with, spider coming out the eye and things like that, right? Very graphic, very, very graphic. And I don't know if the brahmacharis do this, but, to see a young girl, just think what old age does. Just think what old age does. It's quite graphic, isn't it, when you look at how temporary it is. But at the same time, it's no use just being cynical. It's no use just being hard. I know I was, by the time I joined the movement, I was just, it won't work, give it up, right? But where is that apple? The fact that I have happiness, the fact that I desire happiness in this world means it must come from somewhere. It must come from somewhere. So therefore we need that positive happiness in Krishna consciousness. It's difficult though. It's very difficult. because it needs surrender. I was speaking the other day, I was to some children. Because these are values that head teachers, when they go into schools, want to give children. I gave an assembly on this, and I said, when it gets tough, keep going. Right? Of course, you have another alternative. Keep going, you might have to change your tactics sometimes, right? Srila Prabhupada did that, right? He was flexible. Tried to spread Krishna consciousness this way, but it didn't work. Try it a little bit that way. But we keep going. And they do say that we often stop short of a miracle. Right? They say most people in life, they stop short of a miracle because it's when it really gets tough at that point, right? And we all know that. Maya puts that test right in us, you know. Just before, someone was telling me that just before Gaur Purnima, they always get in, you know, it gets heavy. They say before festival, it starts getting really heavy, you know, and they want to run, right? And because it's just at that point when we need to keep going. And of course, Arjuna met that same thing. He actually said to Krishna, did he use the word Madhava, husband of Lakshmi? And Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada says, why are you bringing misfortune on me? And that's what it appears like. It appears that Krishna is actually bringing misfortune to us. It appears that the person who's telling us what to do is bringing misfortune, and we've got service to do. The person that's giving us feedback, the person that's confronting us on something, is bringing misfortune. That's what it feels. Because we're attached to something, and that's being stripped away. Arjuna said the same thing. Why do you want me? You know, I want to enjoy family life, you know. You're ruining it for me. Killing me, either I lose or I win, and then I've killed all my friends. What fun that is. You know? Srila Prabhupada gives that example. I know myself, you know, when people come around to my flat, some friends came around to my flat on my birthday, you know, and they didn't notice how good it was looking. I sort of said to one of them, you notice it's quite a nice flat. I kind of realized what I was doing, right? Srila Prabhupada says when you get opulence, you want to show it off to your friends, right? We want to share it. That's kind of natural in one sense. What we have, we try and share. That's why we share Krishna. So Arjuna wanted to win so he could share it with his friends and say, hey, let's enjoy life. But no. Krishna apparently brought misfortune on him. That's what he thought. This question actually came up. My wife went to a school the other day. The day that I take risks, the day that all the students came. I don't know whether I'm foolish taking risks or not. I don't know what you think about that. But when I take risks, I think, well, at least I have to depend on Krishna, right? You know, when you have to. I remember in the early days, you know, just being dropped off. I used to be dropped off by myself doing Sankirtan, right? So I don't know if maybe, you know, rather than being with the other devotees, I said, you just drop me off in a town by myself. Now you really had to depend on Krishna, right? So someone phoned me up on that same day, and they also wanted a school, me to go to a school. And we've done that for many years. And so if I lose it for 1 year, I might lose it the next year. So I booked that in as well. So my wife went along on the same day. We had all these 100 and so student trainee teachers. And she went to this school, and it was one of those, I was going to say programs. I never liked this word, programs. It's one of those school visits where at the end, we go on a panel with different members of different religions. And it's quite difficult, actually. You have to sit there and have maybe 200, sometimes 500 students, and they'll ask questions. And they'll sometimes ask questions that you all have to answer, sometimes just to individual members. And you'll be there with maybe a rabbi, and maybe a Baptist, and, you know, maybe this type of Roman Catholic, or Buddhist, etc., etc. And this time, and I really was upset I missed it. They had a humanist. Now, I don't know if you know secular humanists. They really like a good fight, you know what I mean? They like a good argument. So I like a bit of chutney with my meal now again. So, you know, preaching means Sankirtan. We just spread the holy name. We're not there for a fight. But occasionally, we like a little bit of chutney, right? Spice it up a bit. And unfortunately, my wife said, oh, well, I don't think I did very well. I don't know if she's being humble or but she said I didn't do so very well. And she said what happened was at some point, the question came up, if something like, I don't know how many people were killed in the tsunami, but if so many people were killed in the tsunami, you know, why did, you know, how can there be a God? How can there be a God? And apparently, the humanist said, he said, it's easy. All those people were killed because there is no God. And apparently everyone just burst into applause when he said that. My wife was a little disturbed by this. And I was a little disturbed because I thought, wow, I wish I was there. And then I started thinking about it. And I was thinking certain things. Quite a few different things went through my mind for a few hours when I was thinking how I would respond to that. But then one thing occurred to me. I thought, well, why ask that question? I think I'd answer like that. Why ask that question? Why did 27,000 or how many people got killed in the tsunami? Why not be a little more philosophical about that question and say, why do we have to die anywhere? You understand what I'm saying? Whether it's in a tsunami or whether it's some kind of disaster or it's not, we're all going to die, right? And you'll have your own personal disaster. It's just that it all happens at once with some people, right? You could die tomorrow, you could die the day after, you could die the day after. But it all happens. Is it really any different? Is it any different, really? Because a philosopher always looks for the principles. Is it really any different? So the real question is not. And then I thought, well, it's a little emotional, actually. You understand what I'm saying? It's a little emotional to say, why did 27,000 people die? You know, it's getting a bit into. I thought it's a bit getting into the Billy Graham sort of thing, right? If I can say that, right? You know, the sort of emotional sort of religion. However, this guy's claiming he's not religious. It's getting into the sentimental thing, which we claim religions do. But I'd say he was doing the same thing. And if it was there, I'd probably tell him that. Nicely. Or not so nicely. Right? And maybe not so nicely. Right? The point is, why is the death? So we could say, well, God's bad because we die. But however, there's quite a simple alternative response to that. Mrityu sarvam harashchaham. Krishna is death. That's the point. There's something we cannot overcome. Let's just admit it. There's something greater than us. Right? Of course, their mood is, well, they'll say, well, there's no death. We're working on it. Right? We're working on it. Yeah? And what's their solution? Their solution is, although they're working on it, they're also killing people. That's their solution. They're saying euthanasia. Isn't that a cop-out? To me, it's a cop-out. It's sad. It's not nice at all when people are paralyzed and things like that. I can't imagine what kind of pain it must be. But to say we're overcoming death and then the solution when someone has it is death seems like a cop-out to me. It seems like they haven't quite made up their mind whether they want life or death. It does seem as if Krishna's cool. Cruel. I was going to say cool. Krishna's cool. He's certainly cool. We know he's cool. But it does appear as cruel. But doesn't it, to the child, doesn't it? You know, you take the razor blade away, the child's playing with a razor blade or an old toy. I used to have these metal toys when I was a kid. I used to have these little metal dinky cars, right? They have a bit of metal sticking out. And you know, so you could cut yourself, so your mother takes it away. Right? You think she's cruel. You're convinced she's cruel. The child screams. You can see how convinced the child is. But we know. It's not cruel. So in the same way, it's a lot of faith, isn't it? That, you know, you go through such big suffering that Krishna actually is doing that out of love. He's actually just taking that illusion away. Because we don't actually know what the happiness is. If we could actually see the happiness that we actually had if we were actually Krishna conscious, then it would be no problem, would it? And we, you know, we're giving up this to get this. No problem. But unfortunately, as Srila Prabhupada says, we don't have that taste. Therefore, it appears bitter. Because it's given in. We say that to the children. We say, you know, we say there's three kinds of happiness. There's a kind of happiness which is just, you know, getting drunk all the time, taking drugs. That's, forget that one. This is the way I explain the three modes to the kids. And then there's a, you know, the other one where you break the rules and it's fun in the beginning and in the end it's. And they all say it. Bah. And I say the other kind of happiness, where it's bad in the beginning, and in the end it's. And they all say good. Right? So that's at least the mode of goodness. We have to come to that where it's quite painful. It's quite bitter. And that's why we need faith. That I'm on this battlefield and I'm being told I've got to kill my relatives, right? Right? The very things that I think will give me pleasure, I must give those up. And of course, there is no giving up. Someone once said to me when I was giving a talk, why do you have to give things up in religion? I said, you don't have to give anything up. In life, you only get better. Did you find it difficult? I said to him, do you find it difficult not wearing nappies anymore? Is it painful? Oh, I miss my nappies. Right? No. No. But every change is painful, right? Isn't it very, when you're trying to make new habits, when you're trying to break old habits, it's painful. Very, very painful. Any change. We find that in the temple when there's any changes, right? A few years ago we decided, you know, things aren't financially being quite right sometimes. Let's get everything straight. And people, oh, we can't do that. I'm used to sort of, you know, thanks for doing that service, Prabhu. Here's a little something to help you out. Right? All kinds of things going on. And everyone said, no, it won't work. But it did work, as far as I can see. I thought there were benefits, right? Years ago I was, I had to start charging for the schools, you know, and I thought, we don't charge, we just do it on donations. We have to sort of, you know, become like a business and charge money. And what was the result? The result was, you know, I felt better about myself, and we went in the schools and we managed to pay for a car and, you know, present Krishna consciousness much nicer. But it was painful, it was difficult. So therefore, that faith and trust is necessary when it gets difficult to keep on going. And also to take feedback, because sometimes they say we have to know when to change. If it doesn't work this way, try it that way, but don't give up. Right? It's the same with Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Right? Try this, you know, but if it doesn't work that way. Of course, we shouldn't try and change too much in the beginning. Try and stick it out, but then if you stick out, it's not working. Okay, maybe I should try and approach from a different angle, be a bit playful, be a bit experiment, right? Srila Prabhupada said, if you know, when someone sannyas fell down, okay, grihastha, carry on as a grihastha. But the main thing is become Krishna conscious. Don't get caught up in the externals, right? Sometimes we get caught up in the externals. Accept it. Okay, I can't do it this way. Try that way. But whatever makes us Krishna conscious, we have to carry on. Bhuktaram yagatapasam sava lokam heshanam. See, we have to understand Krishna's in control and do our best and then let go, leave the result unto him. Something I find very difficult. Letting go is so subtle, isn't it? Letting go, how do you let go, right? Very, very subtle. Difficult to do. When the moon comes out and you're a thief, you shake your hand at the moon. When you're doing something wrong and the policeman comes, you don't like it. Right? Remember on Sankirtan? Right? You can see the policeman as an enemy, right? But I remember when I was back in the 70s and 80s, I used to have terrible fights after football matches. Used to be some terrible fights. But not so bad nowadays, I think. But it used to be really rough. I remember as soon as you saw a policeman, you felt okay in that circumstance because they were protecting you. Now, sometimes when people are swimming, they think that when the guy comes to save them, because lack of oxygen, it makes you deluded, right? So they actually, most people, they say that the person who's drowning thinks that the person who's trying to save them is the cause of their misfortune. Why are you trying to drown me? Right? But the person's trying to pull them out. So in the same way, we see that whatever Krishna's doing to rescue us is actually a source of misfortune, whereas it's fortune. Therefore, we must have faith. We must cultivate that faith and trust. And have the experience. Just like, you know, when we have those experiences, I think we should write them down sometimes, right? Those times when I have difficulties and then I get through it. I think, yes, Krishna's already done it. That's trust. It's a relationship. You know, when you have a relationship, you can't build trust straight away. We can't just build trust straight away. We have to find, you know, you get into a relationship, it's no use saying, trust me. You've got to actually do something together, right? You got to, you know, you ever have mates like that? You know, your friends, I've got brahmachari friends who, you know, I know that there's certain people that I could always trust and they'd always be reliable because I learnt by experience, right? And even if they did make a mistake, maybe they apologize and then we carry on, so I can trust them. So in the same way, we have to build that relationship with Krishna. All right, I'm going to stop there and ask any questions.